okay. So, you've seen me Friday night, Saturday and Sunday, and sometimes I have to sit up here, don't have any freedom, can't go to the toilet, have to go my teeth out. But, have you ever seen me get upset at you? Sometimes the way to do this, that is what I teach, is just to, again, emphasize three questions. Now is the only time in the whole world. And I always love to practice the person in front of me, whoever's standing up here was a photograph, or who wants their book signed. They're the most important person in the whole world. But the only thing I need to do is to be kind, to care for people. And hopefully, those of you who come up here to get your book signed, you actually felt that you were important. Because too often in our world, we're tired, we've got other things to do, we push people away. And that really is terrible if you're at the end and they're being pushed away. So it's wonderful to be able to practice these different things, and then you can find that you don't get tired. Because most of the tiredness is when we're stressing out because we just don't want to be here. We want to get rid of this moment to get somewhere else which we think is going to be better. And so much of our lives is like that. Always going to the next thing. Never actually being here. Always wanting to be somewhere else. Never actually being in life as it's happening. We live in a life of previews of the future and reruns of the past. We never actually live. So here, when we have the gap between the meditation and when we are just talking to one another, it is part of the meditation practice if you do this properly, correctly. Once you're working, it's so easy to practice. Now's the most important time. The one in front of you is the most important person, and the most important thing to do is to care, to be kind, because that changes the ethos of your workplace. It is the part of the culture of Cathay Pacific, because I've been teaching there every year at the airline. I've been teaching there, the head of HR comes every time, and he said he makes this part of the training in the company. It actually works. So what you're learning here is not just how to get into deep meditation, it's also how to live your life in a more peaceful, wonderful, happy way. I always say there is no difference between how to meditate and how to live your life. So if anyone actually meditates and afterwards gets angry at their kids, their partner, or the person in the street, you haven't learned what meditation is yet. But if you can be kind and caring and happy with the people you meet in life, and when there's any difficulty in your life, you can take it as peacefully, then you can meditate deeply as well. Sometimes when I ask people, give them personal interviews of their meditation, they can say all sorts of bullshit about their meditation, just exaggerated, trying to impress because they want to achieve things. But I don't really listen to that. I look at their character, their expressions, look at their face. That's why I learn how their deeper meditation is, how peaceful they are, because that is actually how meditation works. It's as if you're not with a person anymore, you're with yourself. You're with me. And so what do you do when you're with yourself? Just now's the most important time. You, right here, right now, is the most important person in the world when you've got your eyes closed, when you're with yourself. And you are caring. Caring, compassion, kindness, the most important part of meditation. Too many people use force, and that's what the Buddha used before he became enlightened. The force, you can try that if you wish. Using force, using willpower, you can stand perfectly still for 1 hour without moving, even if people are trying to disturb you, irritate you. You can see those people outside Buckingham Palace standing perfectly still for 1 hour, but I guarantee they are not enlightened. So, using force can give you such, it can appear to be still, but inside your mind is just holding very tightly. And you can't continue like that very long. It is crucial that when you do meditate, you enjoy it. Because if you enjoy the meditation, if it does give you some happiness and pleasure, it means you'll do it again and again and again and again and again. However, if there's no pleasure, there's no sort of joy, after a while you'll give up. Why meditate? But on that, you can't have success on every meditation. It is just like the story I developed of the refugee. Can I tell that story of the refugee? The refugee coming to London, getting a job on the building site. I told that one today. Okay. Somewhere. Refugee got a job on the building site, worked really hard all day Monday, never got any reward. His wife said, "How much did you earn today, darling?" "Nothing." Went to work Tuesday, Wednesday, same happened. Didn't get any pay. He said, "People in London are really cruel and heartless to refugees. We work for them, but they don't pay us anything." Thursday, they didn't really have much else to do, so I tried again on Thursday, and again, got no pay. So that was it. He was going to go to the building site again, but his wife forced him to go to the building site on Friday. And on Friday, he didn't even work as hard or as long, and his boss gave him a big pay packet. And he went back home and said, "Darling, I finally figured out how it works in England. From now on, I'm only going to go to work on Fridays." Now, that little story, it's not just a joke, but it has a meaning, that when you do meditate, maybe first meditation you don't get anything, second, third, fourth, and then you get your paycheck. Things really happen, it gets very peaceful. And just like any career, the more you work at the building site, the more your pay rates go up, 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 you get more joy, more often. And eventually become promoted to the CEO of meditation. And then you get paychecks as much as you want, whenever you want. A lot of happiness and a lot of joy. And it's a happiness and joy of meditation which I really like to emphasize. Because if you get the happiness and joy, then that will lead you further and further and further. Sometimes people ask me about having a teacher. You don't need a teacher all the time. All you need is to get started. You need to get inspired. And then you're off by yourself. As the Buddha often said, after giving the talks, "Here are the empty huts, here are the quiet places, off you go and meditate." So people did that. And they learned just by being aware, seeing what works, seeing what doesn't work, how to make the mind so peaceful and so joyful. And some people, because of some people have been a Buddhist a long time, they ask me, "Well, what's the point? Is it just being happy? Is that it? I thought we're supposed to become enlightened." Yeah, it is. Happiness is really important, but also the understanding things is also important. And as I did mention earlier, the more happiness you have, the stronger is your mindfulness. We do have a whole industry now teaching mindfulness, but very few of them teach the different strengths of mindfulness. Depression is low mindfulness, very, very low at the bottom. Ordinary people, when you're tired, there is still low mindfulness. When you've got a bit of energy, that's average mindfulness, but that's still not enough to really get great insights into the meaning of life. Sometimes people say I'm a wise monk, sometimes I say I'm just a wise guy. But anyhow, just where does that wisdom come from? I've never studied psychology, but much of my teachings are actually practiced in therapist studios. I've never studied medicine. But even many of these techniques are used by doctors. So where did this all come from? My background was in theoretical physics, totally divorced from the mind. So where did this all come from? This all came from when you get very, very still, your mindfulness gets strong. So strong that you can see things which other people can't see. It's not psychic powers. It's just like you're in this room, pretty dull lights here. It's coming on to winter time in the UK. But in the summertime, the lights are stronger in the UK. Imagine maybe during the summertime, people are much happier. And they can see more, feel more. They're less inside themselves, they haven't got out. And this is similar. If I can turn up, well, similarly is, I'm a guy, I have to shave every morning. And that's really a bummer, having to shave every morning, especially when you're a bit late for something. But shaving every morning, I might not turn the lights on when I shave. Then with my razor, scrape, 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 and then I can do it in a few seconds. If the lights are on, I have to go over it again. There's some stubble somewhere. And sometimes I go to these hotels and I have these mirrors which actually are so clear and they've got lights like shining on your chin. I hate those. But then when I can see all the bits of stubble, it takes me forever to actually to shave. The brighter it is, the more you see. So that's this stubble, that's a bad thing. But when you are meditating, that's what it's like. You're turning the lights on in the room of your mind. More and more lights on. It gets brighter and brighter and brighter. And you can see more and more and more. And the more you see, the more you understand about your body, about your mind, about your life. It's so bright you can understand these things. You can understand how your body works. You know, just by feeling it, by knowing it, you can be aware, honestly, aware of your liver. People say that's impossible, but of course you could be aware of your liver. So if you've got any liver problems, you can mess around with it. An example. One of the monks in the monastery where I live had a very bad back. And so he went to see the doctor. The doctor gave him an MRI scan. And came back, say you have a congenital deformation of your spine. There's nothing we can do, it's just you're born with it. And the only thing I can advise you is not to meditate, not to sit down on the floor for too long periods. It's going to get worse. And he said, that's like telling a Singaporean not to eat. It's like telling a person not to do what they really love in their life. He said, look, I'm a monk, I have to meditate. So the doctor said, well, you're going to be in great pain, there's nothing we can do. And so this young monk, now he went and searched around the internet and he came across this wonderful little technique. The technique started with telling him there are muscles on either side of the spine which most of us are never going to be aware of, we just don't know they exist. We've never really bothered to know them. So the first thing he was supposed to do in the training for many, many weeks is to take his hand and stroke those muscles on either side of his spine. Stroke them maybe for half an hour every day until he could feel those muscles without having to touch them. Just a simple act of touching and stroking those muscles was making a neural connection in his brain. And then once he could actually feel those muscles, he was aware of them, then he could learn by trial and error how to move them, how to expand them, stretch them, release them. That took a long time of trial and error, but eventually he managed to do it. Because he was aware of that area, he could actually learn. It's exactly the same way that kids learn how to walk or lift things up. So he learned how to be aware of those muscles and then to move them. And then he was able to exercise them, moving up and down in a routine every day until those muscles became so strong that they compensated for the weakness in his bones, his spine. Now he does not have any pain. mission accomplished. And there were certain examples of what we can do once we start developing some awareness of our body. We can only do that, he can only do that because he was a meditator and his mindfulness was strong. Now, not only that, when our mindfulness is strong enough on our emotional world, but sometimes that world is just such a complicated place. But once our mindfulness does develop, we get lots of insights into how our emotions work and how to deal with them. One of my famous insights was to notice that every emotion has a corresponding feeling in your body. Every emotion. So when you're angry, if you could take the time to look at your body, there's a certain feeling, a certain part of the body, which is not associated with any other emotion except for anger. Fear has another feeling, love has a feeling. Every emotion has a feeling in the body. And once you can recognize that, you can, if you need to, have control over your emotions. As with this woman, her name is Jippy. She was a son of a Thai couple, sorry, a daughter of a Thai couple. Studying in Adelaide University, she had extreme anxiety. She was bedridden. And being in a university, in a place like Australia, you have free access to doctors, psychologists, to psychiatrists, but no one could help her until she called the great psychiatrist that her brought. In fact, isn't that great? And many of you have heard this before on YouTube. I told her, where does the associated physical feeling with your anxiety, where in your body do you feel it? And she said, on my chest, not good enough, I want to have a coordinate, I said. Now, from your navel, how many centimeters up, is it to the left, to the right, this feeling, is it just located in one place or spread over a long place? I wanted her to become more aware of the physical feeling. She had time to do that. 3 days later she called. She located it perfectly. Now describe it to me. She said, it's tense, that's all. That is not good enough. Any doctors here know how difficult it is when a patient comes to you and says it hurts. Where? It hurts. And you've got to figure out exactly what is the cause of that pain. Because they don't give a very good description. So I asked her 3 days to give me a full description. After 3 days she did. This all this was doing was making her mindful of that feeling. Really mindful. Not just ordinary mindfulness. And then the next day it was easy. So next time you have that anxiety attack, take your hand and massage your chest. Massage it with as much kindness as possible. And you've heard the story before, I hope. She had a living boyfriend called Lloyd, who was looking after her, just one of these boys from heaven. Honestly, if you ever find a boy like that, grab him, chain him, keep him. They don't make many boys like that. Okay, so if you can't do that because you're too tired, get your boyfriend to massage your chest. You'll find with boys you don't have to ask them twice. So, give me a call in 3 days. And then she did. And they said, did you follow the instructions? Yes. Did you massage your chest? Yes. What happened to the feeling in your chest? Did it vanish? It disappeared? So I was massaging it. It relaxed it. And what happened to your anxiety? And she said, that went too. Now you have a way to deal with your anxiety attacks. She was 2 or 3 weeks out of bed, back to university, got first class honours, married Lloyd, and I did the marriage ceremony for them. Saw them about 2 weeks ago with their kids. Beautiful couple. No anxiety anymore. Or maybe she does have it, but she knows how to deal with it. So simple. And all that comes and being aware of how your mind and body interact. So, with greater awareness by meditating, you will increase your own health enormously. And you won't have to rely so much on doctors. They can help you, and if you do go to see them, you'll be able to give them a good description of what the problem is, which helps them enormously help you. But mostly you're aware of your own body. You know how to deal with it. So you also know how to deal with your emotions. And so this helps you live in this world. Insights. And also you have insights, you know, into just the relationships you have with people. Relationships are just so difficult in life. It's okay to say you're going to go off and meditate, but then you start thinking about just your mother or your father, your girlfriend, your boyfriend, your kids having a hard time. It's very helpful if you're going to get peace with meditation to have good relationships at home. And this is where the story is, blessing marriages. Look at the bride and I say to her, you're a married woman now. From this day on, you must never think of yourself. And she smiles and says yes. Then I look at the husband. Now you're a married man. From this day on, you mustn't think of yourself. And in Australia, I think it's pretty much the same in the UK. In Australia, the guy pauses first. He thinks it over. I mustn't think about myself. It's true. I'm a guy, okay? I'm on your side, guys. But this is just my experience. But eventually he gives in. Okay, I won't think of myself. And then, still looking at the guy, this is the killer question. Or suggestion. Still looking at the groom, I say, from this day on, you must not think of your wife. And then turning to the wife, I say, from this day on, you mustn't think of him, your husband. Now just like you, you're wondering what the hell this means. They do too. It's a marvellous moment. When they trust me, there's something here. It's like a riddle, like a crossword puzzle. What's the solution? It's a great way of getting people's attention. But they haven't got a clue what you're talking about. And then I give them the answer. Now you are married, it's nothing to do. You mustn't think of yourself, you mustn't think of your partner. You must only think of us. The third option is about us, not about him or her or me. The relationship is always about us. And that also gives you the trick of meditation too. Meditation is the relationship you have with your own body and mind. If you have a good relationship with your body and mind, you'll have no problems. If you have a bad relationship with your partner, you're always arguing, running away from one another and thinking a lot. Someone once told me, it's a very beautiful analogy, that when you're in love, you whisper to your partner. When you're angry with them, you shout at them. And the reason is that when you're in love, you're close. You don't have to shout. But when you're angry, you're distant. That's why you need to shout. Very good analogy. So, when you're close to yourself, you're at peace with yourself, you accept yourself, you open the door of your heart to yourself, you don't even think so much. You're not shouting, you just whisper. Little whispers is all you need. But if you're distant from yourself, you're angry, that's why you have to think. All thinking is a sign of discontent. You may not agree with that, but that's the insight which I have got over many years meditating. If you have contentment, compassion, more metta, you find you don't think so much. You don't need to. So, we learn to be peaceful, we learn to be kind. And then we go even deeper into insight. Not just understanding our body and mind and the fact that all life is about relationships. even like the relationship you have with your meditation object. That also is crucial to successful meditation. I've seen people have their breath, but their relationship with their breath is terrible and control free. They're holding their breath in a vice-like grip, terrified it might disappear. Always tense, never get the beautiful peace of meditation. People I've mentioned is who love their breath, and their breath loves you back. You have a wonderful relationship with your meditation object. Then you and your breath can stay together for hours and hours and hours, happy in each other's company, and the mind doesn't wander off at all. You have a good relationship with your body, with your mind, with your breath. Later on, when these lights come in to your mind, what relationship have you got with your limiters, the lights? It's not what you're watching, but how you're watching these things is crucial. So have a beautiful relationship with these things. And then, that's when eventually we get into the deep meditations. Now I'm just going to say this at the very end, because I'm going to finish off with a little metta meditation to finish on. Because when I tell these similes of insights, the big insights, for many people it just disturbs them. I was once in Singapore, and the head of the group, the Buddhist Fellowship there, the president at the time, asked for a deep talk. So I really gave him a deep talk, the sort of talk I give to monks. And afterwards he said, please never do that again. He never slept all night, because it really turned him upside down. He had faith in me. He trusted what I said. And it made him look at life in a totally different way. It is the simile of the, and I learned this word in German, there's many German speakers here, called Papa. Tadpole. Tadpole. Little frog, baby frog. Called Papa, yeah. I thought you were German. Cow. Crappe. Can't see now, come on. It's in German with an Australian accent. Mate. G'day. How are you? So anyway, tadpole. So once there was a little tadpole swimming happily in a lake, and she was a very smart tadpole. She went to tadpole school. She did her O levels and A levels, and she went to Tadpole University, where she majored in chemistry. And she was so smart, she carried on doing a PhD in the little lake in Tadpole University. And what she was investigating is water. And she got a PhD on water studies, hydrology. And even though she had a PhD, do you think she could understand water? Later on, she studied Buddhism, the Abhidhamma, and she learned all the deepest teachings about water. But even with all that knowledge, how can a little tadpole know what water is? She was born in water, she lived all her life in water. And you can know the theory, but how can you know what water is? No more than a fish could understand water. Now the difference between a fish and a cow could pet. Okay, a fat tadpole. I'm not going to push my luck anymore. The difference between a tadpole and a fish is a tadpole grows into a frog one day. And when little tadpole becomes a frog, she doesn't exactly know what she's doing, but one day she jumps and she's out of the lake. And that must be the most strange experience for little tadpole. There's something missing, which has always been there, and because it's always been there, she could never recognize it. Water. Only now can a frog know what water is. Once it's disappeared. It's been there all the time. You just can't notice it. But now it's come. Ah, that's what water is. And that is the symbol I've used for the art of disappearing. When you get into deep meditation, things vanish. In the first jhana, your body totally vanishes. Do you know what your body is? How can you? You've lived in your body as long as you can remember. You can understand your body as much as a fish can understand water. Even if you've got a PhD in anatomy, even if you're a doctor, cutting our bodies every day, you don't really understand the body. Especially in the five senses, the seeing, smelling, tasting, touching, and smelling. You can't know those things until they disappear. Once they're gone, now you can know what those things are. And also, especially the next jhana. First jhana you can actually understand this, but second jhana is so obvious. The thing which is missing is your will, your controller, your ability to decide to do things. That is no longer there. It's gone. That is weird. But so blissful. Don't have to choose anymore. It's terrible going to supermarkets these days. So much choice. When I used to go to supermarkets to get some muesli, there was only one brand. Now there's probably 100 brands. Yeah, that's fine. It's 100 brands. But especially for refugees who come to this country from poor countries. There was one refugee who came into this country. They took him to a supermarket for the first time. You couldn't believe it. Instant mashed potatoes. Just mashed potato powder. You just add hot water and you get mashed potatoes. He said, well, in the old country, we had to plant potatoes in the field and make sure they were looked after, and then actually when you wanted them, you could actually dig them up, and then you had to wash them and peel them and boil them and then mash them. Such a lot of work. Here in London, you just need to get mashed potato powder and add hot water. It's incredible. He went to another aisle. So instant, milk powder. Just add water, you get milk. In the old country, you had to get a cow. Pull its teeth, make sure it didn't kick you. And that's the way you look. But what really blew his mind, in another aisle, he saw baby powder. In the old country, you had to get a woman. Takes my life. Here in London, just add water, you get baby. That's not why old famous don't. So anyway, back to the high stuff about things vanish, disappear, choice, will. Now those are the insights which turn you upside down. Now you know what will actually is. It's been around you all the time, like a water around a fish. What is this thing called choice, will? And once you find that out, from experience, you realize the will is not your friend anymore. It's actually your enemy, number one. And you think if you cherish the will, your freedom of choice, if you cherish that, you won't give that up. That's why people sacrifice their lives for freedom. You see, it's not freedom at all. It's a prison. When you let go, it's the opposite of no. Let go. No will. Doing nothing. No self. This is where you understand what the Buddha was teaching. Without that, without jumping outside of the water, no way can the tadpole understand the meaning of life. That is why I teach the jhanas. So all your little tadpoles, one day will jump out of the water. Leave your body behind, leave your will behind, and experience the beautiful bliss. and freedom. I don't decide what I'm doing. My will is totally conditioned. Sometimes I ask myself, where did this come from? And I look back, oh yeah, I got it from my dead child. Or my bad child, I got that from my dad. None of it comes from me. So at the end of this retreat, please don't blame me. Please don't blame me. Nothing is my fault. I'll take absolutely no responsibility for the last 2 or 3 days. Okay, I just wanted to add that deep one in there, just at the very end, so when you leave, you'll always have something, wow, this is not just fun and laughter and jokes, there's some deep stuff at the end of this meditation retreat. But, in order to stop you thinking about this, because I just want it to settle in your mind, and later on, through others, you might understand it. Now is the time, because the time is running away, to do some loving kindness. Practice rather than talk. So, if you like to close your eyes and get ready in your meditation posture. Here we go. I only do 20-25 minutes, so not too long. So close your eyes, become aware of your body, just be still as best you can, and relax. And after 5 minutes, I'll be guiding you in a type of loving kindness meditation. But first of all, just settle down. And just relaxing your mind and making it peaceful. Just like when you light a fire, you put a match to a piece of paper first. It easily takes the flame. And then you put little twigs on, kindling, and then bigger pieces of wood. And slowly you increase the size of the wood. Because if you put a match to a big log, you're wasting your time and will never take the flame. You increase the size of the wood gradually in order to build a really big fire. And once the fire is strong, you can even put wet wood onto the fire. And the heat of the fire will dry the wood out, and so it too will take the flames. This is a simile for loving kindness meditation. You start with something you find very easy to have feelings of warmth and kindness towards. So please develop a prime first object of loving kindness. Something you find really easy to care for. I normally use a little kitten. If you don't like cats, puppy, a rabbit, it could be a little baby, maybe a grandchild, you know. It could be just like one lady in Sydney. She used a pot plant on her balcony. The subject you find very easy to love and care for. Imagine it. So when I say kitten, you could understand that word to be your primary object of loving kindness. So I imagine just walking from here and finding or hearing a little kitten squealing in a dark corner of London. I just can't go past that scream for help, because that little kitten has been abandoned. The mother, for some reason, has left it alone, vulnerable, terrified. And that little kitten, whenever it has gone out seeking for help, has only been hurt and scratched and chased away. Hasn't eaten for days. It's cold, hungry, without a friend in the whole city. And I just happen to be walking past. And I stop and look into that dark corner where this wonderful being is cowering from the world. All I can see is two big eyes with this little kitten. Scared, but just with a tiny bit of hope that maybe this big fellow could be kind to her. I'm looking in her eyes and I'm imagining doing this now, as you imagine with your primary meditation on him. Looking into this little kitten's eyes, I say, little kitten, please let me help you and care for you. I will never harm you or hurt you in any way. Looking into its eyes, I give it all the love and kindness, generating that kindness in my heart and just spreading it towards this kitten who really needs it desperately. It's going to die without me, die a lonely, cold, hungry death. I can't let that happen. And when I feel that kitten has got a little bit of trust, I reach out my hand. As I reach out my hand, I see the kitten withdrawn, scared, but not totally. I push out my hand closer and closer, and that little kitten lets me touch her. Lets me touch her. Little kitten, I'll never harm you. Please let me help you. And as gently as I possibly can, as slowly, I put my hand under its body. I can feel its bones. I can feel the dirt, even the scabs of blood on its fur. And slowly, I lift it up. Slowly, I bring this poor little skin and bones, fur and blood, little being, close to me. I hold it next to my chest, still looking into its eyes. Little kitten, I will be your carer. I will look after you, protect you, heal you, feed you, whatever you like, fish, chicken, the best cat food, I've got lots of supporters. I will care for you, little king. You are safe. You have a protector. And I feel the once hard, rigid body of the cat go soft. I see it warm with my warmth holding it close to my chest. And all the caring, lovely, nurturing part of my being, I just shower on that little being who needs it so much, holding it, warming it, and I see his eyes close in trust, and I hear my little kitten purr, maybe for the first time in its life, as it realizes it is safe. It has got a protector. Even though it's still hungry, it knows it will be fed. It's found safety. And as I give my loving kindness, my care, to this little imaginary kitten, I feel the area around my chest start to tingle and get soft. I feel my heart start to aware of that area. And I imagine from the area around my physical heart, some warmth or light come out, a golden light start to come out through my chest into that little kitten who needs it so much. Little kitten, I care for you. I will enjoy to have so much happiness watching you grow and play and become a real big cat. I care for you. And I use my imagination and this little commentary to build up a feeling of loving kindness. Little kitten, the door of my heart is always open to you. I won't control you, tell you what to do or how to do it. You know how to be a cat, not me. I'll just help you and care for you. Feed you, protect you, nurture you. That's all I ask. So I make this bond with my cat. The bond of caring, loving, giving, sharing. But when my fire is strong enough, lit on paper, easy to take the flame, then I use another object, a real thing this time, a person, the person that's closest to you in this life, your best friend, your lover, your daughter's son, mother, father. You imagine them as if they're right in front of you. My dear friend, you are like that little kid. You need love and care and nurturing and softness. The world can be very hard sometimes. It can be so painful. You need me as I need you. My dear friend, I care for you. My dear friend, I really want you to be well and happy. Is there anything I can do? I'm here for you, especially. Imagine that friend right in front of you. And imagine your heart tingling as this golden light of loving kindness starts to pour out towards your very best friend. And then love comes back to you as well. There's something which is way beyond logic, intellect, and common sense with caring for somebody. The more you care for them, the more you can care. It just grows exponentially. And this golden light starts pouring out of your heart, drenching your best friend, your closest companion in this world, from head to toe, all over, taking away their fear, taking away their loneliness. The world may criticize you, but I always think you're awesome. Fantastic. You're my friend. Forever. I care for you. You can feel this golden glow in your heart pouring to your best friend, getting stronger and stronger. And the more love and kindness you give, the more happiness, the more power, the more energy you have. You feel good too. Then once it's strong enough, without opening your eyes, imagine all the people in this room with whom you've shared the last few days. There may be somebody you know and love and care for. There may be somebody you've never met before in your life. But they need your love too. They need to know there's people who really care about them, who really want them to be well and happy, who think that you're not just good enough, You're more than good enough. You're a beautiful being who has been a pleasure to spend the last few days with. Thank you, my friend. And you spread this loving kindness to every person in this room. This golden glow of kindness, metta, love to everybody. Bathing them head to toe, soaking them with your well-wishing and kindness and love and power. May all be happy and well. You don't need to change, you don't need to improve. I love you for who you are, as you are. The door of my heart open to everybody, perfect as you are. Because you appreciate the beauty of each person. As a loving kindness just builds and builds, this goodness, this well-wishing, this support, validation, respect, whatever you wish to call it, because you care for one another. Go way beyond reason, you love, until this golden light of love, illogical, irrational, but real, becomes so strong, it bursts through the walls and windows and roof and doors of this building, spreading out over London. There are so many people in this great city, arguing, afraid, lonely, rejected, ill, sick, dying. They need your kindness. And never ever think you can't help. As you spread this light like a golden blanket over London, there are many of your friends in this city who aren't here. They too can benefit from just a little bit of kindness. May all beings in this city stop arguing. May you not be afraid. May you know that there are people who actually care for you. People you don't know about. May you spread this loving kindness over the whole city. Until it starts spreading further. Many of you have come from distant lands, including me. Expanding over Scotland and Dublin and the rest of Ireland. Way over to Europe, to Germany and Poland, Italy, Norway. Spreading over Asia, down to Australia, where I've got so many people I love down there, care about, the United States, Africa, the whole world. The more you spread, the more powerful it becomes. May all beings in this world be happy and well. It may take a while to achieve, but that's what I wish for you. I care for you. I give my energy to you. May all beings be free. Free from feeling they're alone, that no one cares. I care, you care, we care. Until this golden light from your chest goes over the whole planet. And not just human beings, the birds in the sky, animals, fish, things which creep on the ground. It's amazing when practices loving kindness. No animals, no snakes ever bother us in where I live. They come and play with us. Kangaroos jump towards us and they run away. May all beings be at peace, free from fear, knowing that they are welcome. They are part of this great planet. And we respect you and care for you. How does that feel? Now, one last person you've missed out. Yourself. Keeping your eyes closed, imagine that you're looking in the mirror. At yourself, this little person you've been with for all your life. This little person has been hurt so many times. Rejected, even hit emotionally scarred from life. You, a frightened little kitty. Now give that beautiful light glow of loving kindness to yourself. Me, I care about me. Whatever I've done, which I'm not proud of, I love myself so much, I'm going to learn and let it go. Me, the door of my heart is wide open. Can you imagine those parts of you which you don't like, which are ashamed of, standing outside, and you pull a ladder down from your heart to the floor. So all of those little you, the little man who was abused, shouted at, told he was hopeless, the little girl was never good enough. Invite them up the stairs into your heart. Invite them up. They're part of you. You care for them. May I, all of me, all of my past, come inside my heart and care for you. We have so many little me's. Some we keep inside, some we drive out because we're ashamed of. Now be all of those together. May I be happy and well. May I understand by making mistakes, that's how we learn and grow. May I allow for my mistakes. May I be free, at peace, whole, that this beautiful loving kindness goes to you. Head to toe, tip of every finger, the right hand to the left hand, everywhere. Respecting who you are, accepting who you are, loving who you are. May I be at peace. How do you feel? Now everything was sent. So now imagine that light which you've sent out from your own heart spread as far and wide as the whole earth. Now imagine drawing it in, leaving the warmth but bringing back the glow. Drawing it into your heart, drawing it back, drawing it back, drawing it back. Until it's like a ball of intense light. Imagine it as a ball of love hovering inside you over your heart. Imagine your heart like a white lotus. You're open to the ball of loving kindness, just hovering over it. And imagine the little lotus petals closing, the only thing pure enough to keep that loving kindness to use at another time, in another place. Please don't open your eyes here. I will now give a blessing, a Buddhist blessing for you. And after the blessing, then you can open your eyes.